Good morning. Out of all of my parenting fails, and there have been quite a few over the years, the most relevant, I think, to today's passage concerns one with my son, Daniel. So I had decided, instead of teaching him how to tie his shoelaces or tidy up his toys, I decided I needed to teach him generosity. And so I took him into town, and I think the first thing we did was we went over the Itchen Bridge, the toll bridge, and I decided that we were going to pay for the car behind us because I wanted Daniel to see that look of surprise and joy, how much joy you can get out of, you know, being generous. And so as we went over the Itchen Bridge and we paid for the people behind, which the guy in the toll booth was very confused about, we then kind of had to stop the car because I wanted Daniel to see the look on their face. So that didn't work very well. Anyway, we eventually drove off. And then there was another time when we went to Thornton's that used to be in West Quay. And we had ice cream, and we paid, we gave some extra money so that whoever wanted to buy an ice cream next would get a free ice cream. And then we kind of hid. Because I wanted Daniel to see just how wonderful it was to be generous. Anyway, that was weird. That was really weird. He was only about 7 or 8. What was I doing? Anyway, fortunately, as he approaches his 27th birthday, he has actually grown up to be a very generous person, in spite of all my best efforts, really. Anyway, fortunately for us, God is much better at teaching us generosity than I am, and he's given us chapter 2 in Ruth. So those of us who were around last week would have heard Ben preach on the first chapter, and he left us with a bit of a cliffhanger, which was really just a shameless attempt at a hook to get you all coming back this week, which I'm very grateful for. Anyway, we'd heard about the famine that had hit Bethlehem and how Naomi and her husband Elimelech and their two sons had made the desperate decision to leave Bethlehem in Judah and move to Moab. And there'd been hostilities between Judah and Moab for years and years, so they were desperate. The sons later went on to marry local Moabite women. And so you imagine maybe life was getting that little bit better. But then fast forward 10 years, both of the sons had died and Naomi's husband had died. So life for widows in that time would have been really tough. So they would have been completely dependent on the support they were going to get from their extended family. So it would make sense for the two daughters-in-law to stay in Moab with their extended family. And one of them did, but one of them, Ruth, chooses to go with Naomi. So this is extraordinary generosity when you think that she's leaving her support, her financial support, she's leaving everybody she knows, her homeland, to move to Judah, just like Naomi had done with these hostilities, knowing that she was going to be an unwelcome immigrant. It was a huge step. And not only that, but I had a look on Google Maps at the journey, and I had a look at I went on to satellite view, and to get from Moab, which is now called Jordan, to the east of the Red Sea, it would have taken about 7 to 10 days for them to have made this walk. And it's just wilderness, completely barren when you look on satellite view. And then about halfway through the walk, they would have had to have gone over a mountain range, and the ascent on their walk would have been about 7,000 feet. So that's, apparently, that's 1 3/4 Ben Nevis's, because I can't imagine 7,000 feet. So that was an incredible thing for Ruth to undertake. So anyway, let's now pick up the story. So they've arrived at the time of the barley harvest. So this would have been about April time. So what does Ruth do, having made that arduous journey? She gets up and she spends the day gleaning. So April time, the harvest would have happened between dawn and dusk. So Ruth would have had to have been in the field for about 6 o'clock in the morning. And she would have been harvesting for about 13 hours. So this gleaning, what it was the law back then commanded landowners not to harvest the corners of their field and also not to pick up anything that they happened to drop. And that was deliberate for the poor, the widows, and the foreigners to pick. So it was almost like the welfare state of that day, their version of universal credit. So when I was running through my talk with Ben was very excited about the harvest bit. So I am going to demonstrate it, Ben. I have a basket. I didn't know how they would have done this, but Ben showed me without props, sadly. Yes, I have practiced this before. So anyway, so they would have had the basket on them. Here's some barley that I prepared earlier. So the harvesters would have walked along, grabbed their load of barley, cut it with their scythe. Dropped it beautifully in the basket. And then walked on. Right, I'm going to take off the basket before I set fire with the candles to anything. Anyway, this has been deliberate, the fact that I missed the basket, because this demonstrates beautifully what those people gleaning would have done. So Ruth would have then come behind the harvesters, picking up... Sorry, I will tidy this before... So picking up, there we go, all of what was left behind. And I'm going to put this back here. So if her harvesters were as bad as me, she would have done incredibly well. So she finds a field to glean in, and when the owner of the field, Boaz, returns, he wants to know who she is. And you get the impression, when he's talking to the overseer, that they're really impressed by her diligence. Now, I didn't know what an effer, how much that was, and it was about 13 kilos, so 30 pounds, which is an awful lot just to be gathering from leftovers. So she did work really hard. So we've seen Ruth's incredible generosity in staying with Naomi, leaving everything she had behind, with absolutely no hope of getting anything in return. So now we start to see the same coming out in Boaz. So not only does he ensure her safety and provide more than the law required, but he also tells her, and I think this bit is really key, that she's welcome to drink water from the jars that his men have filled. So he's sending a message to his workforce, who have possibly had a bit of an issue with not only an immigrant, but a Moabite immigrant drinking from the same water vessels than they were. So I guess the equivalent for us today would maybe be how maybe some people may feel about immigrants who come over to this country and they receive income support or benefits alongside local people. So Boaz then shares a meal with her with the rest of his harvesters. So his actions are really signalling she is not other, She's not an outsider. She is one of us. And just maybe we're starting to catch a glimpse that maybe somebody is falling in love with somebody. He loves her. He loves her. Anyway, now we're all generous people here. You know, when you think about how we treat our family and friends, we would even give them a last Rolo, wouldn't we? No, maybe not. But the generosity that God is showing us through Boaz takes it to a much deeper level. So this God-like generosity that we extend to those that we may regard as being outside of our herd is what Boaz is demonstrating here. So if we think about the Ruths in our lives, because most of the people we mix with will be very similar to us, so those others, those Ruths for us, may be people from a different nationality, a different gender, different sexual orientation, different political views. But what Boaz was signalling to his workforce is that Ruth was of equal worth to himself and of equal standing as anybody in his herd. So I guess our equivalent of the law that was forbidding landowner or commanding landowners to leave extra for the poor and the widows and the foreigners would be our tax system. So we pay taxes, the taxes go into the central pot, and then that money is then, some of that is spent on income support, housing support, all of that sort of thing. But we live in a society that actually even begrudges paying taxes, which is the bare minimum. And here we see Boaz going way over and above that bare minimum. So how do we treat the others in our lives? You know, do we treat them with the same attitude as we treat people that we recognise as being in our herd? I was thinking, you know, do we wash our coffee mug at work, or do we just leave it for the office cleaners to deal with? Do we pick up a can of baked beans in Tesco's or a shirt in Marksy's and just then decide, oh, actually, I don't really want that, and we just leave it on the nearest shelf because the shop assistants can deal with that? Or do we go to a restaurant and we maybe spill a bit of food on the table or on the floor? Do we just leave it for the waitress or the waiter to deal with? This can be really telling, I think. Anybody can be generous to somebody that they recognise as being a member of their herd, but it's this generosity to the non-members, which is what we're seeing with Boaz. So I just wonder why Boaz was able to be so generous, because he just exudes this sense of whatever is mine is yours. And I think he shows us this in his very first sentence that we hear him say. So when he comes back from town and he says to his workers, "The Lord be with you." Not, "Have you had a good day? How's my harvest looking? Hope you have a good evening." Clearly, the Lord being with them was his first wish. And after that, everything was going to be okay. So if he feels that God is with him, then he must feel that God is providing for him. What he has comes from God. And maybe he saw Ruth's situation and reflected on his own. He maybe recognised that being male gave him this inherently superior earning potential. It may be that he recognised that not being a widow, being forced to leave all of their belongings behind and travel to another country and start from scratch, gave him another massive head start. I was just imagining a race. Let's imagine we're in the 100-metre sprint and the winner is going to get £1 million. And we get given an 80-metre head start, and everybody else in the race gets their shoelaces tied together. So I think even under those circumstances, I will probably win that race. So I would get my £1 million, but I'm going to feel a bit awkward, really. I'm not going to feel as if I've earned that down to my hard work. And when I have a think about my head start, just like Bowie's had, I'm thinking, well, I was born in the UK, 6th highest GDP in the world. I wasn't born in South Sudan, which is about 193rd or 4th, I think the poorest nation. My parents had good health, good physical health, good mental health. So this meant that they were both able to have stable employment. So we were financially stable growing up. I wasn't a young carer, so I could concentrate on my homework. I attended the local schools that had really good teachers, really inspiring teachers, so I did well at school. The genes I've inherited from my mum and dad mean that I've been in good health, so I've been able to be in full-time employment. And the man I fell in love with and married, he had many of the same advantages that I had. And so that meant we could have a financially stable marriage. I could go on. So for me to feel that what I own is all mine, down to my hard work, would be crazy. And I think if we feel that our wealth is rightfully ours, earned due to all our hard work, then the harder it is, we're going to find it to be generous, because we know the effort that we've gone into earning that. So giving it away, it's not easy. But when we start to see the reality through God's eyes that we haven't created our wealth, we've been gifted most of it, then we can see the mistake in us claiming this outright possession of what we have. Luke 12:48, in there we read that everyone who has been given much, much will be demanded. So I guess at a very basic level, we're merely the temporary custodians of God's resources on earth, and we're called to do whatever we can with those resources. So as we draw to a close, I'm going to give us a bit of time to have a think about what we've heard this morning. And we're all going to take something different from the passage. So maybe some of us relate to Ruth. So maybe we feel a bit of an outsider. We maybe feel isolated or lonely, or we don't quite fit in. God sees us just as he saw Ruth. And he responded to her not giving up hope by bringing Boaz into her life. And she went on to become King David's great-grandma. And further down her ancestral line was Jesus. Have a think maybe about the desperate times that you've been in, and think how God has brought people into your lives most unexpectedly. Or maybe it's the generosity of Ruth towards Naomi, or Boaz towards Ruth, that has really struck you. Let's have a think. Father God, thank you for your love for us, your word that we've heard today, and the message that you've chosen for us to hear today. Be with us today, this week, and beyond, so we can lead the lives that you want for us. Amen.